Court will come to order this morning. Welcome all to Commissioner's Court. I'd like to first ask if we have a volunteer to open our session in prayer. Then I shall do it. Let's all stand together. Father God, we come before you today, recognizing that you are a God who loves us, who cares for us, and all of the people of this county, you care so much more than we could ever care for. So, Father, I pray today that as we're in this meeting, that you would be honored, that you would guide our conversation, that we would make decisions that reflect wisdom and understanding for the needs of the people of this community. Won't you do this for us, Lord? We love you. We pray this now in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you, and let's do our pledges, starting with the American flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Texas flag.
Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. Commissioners, we need a motion to approve the court agenda. Do we have a motion?
Move.
Second. All in favor? Motion carries. We move on to item number 7, proclamations and resolutions. We're going to defer this item and move right on to our county clerk and minutes. Commissioners, are there any changes to the minutes? If there are none, do we have a motion to approve?
Move.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. As we move to the consent agenda, there are a couple of citizens that would like to make some comments on a couple of these items. But before we do that, what I'd like to do, assuming they may go to open, is are there any changes or there are any modifications that we would like to make to the consent agenda? Okay, I would like to move item
excuse
F.
Excuse me, Judge.
I'm sorry.
Need to defer item 9K4E.
9K4E.
Yes.
E. What page is that?
That's on six, page 6.
9K4E. Got it. Okay.
Okay. I'd like to defer item 6F or 9F1 on page 4 to the open agenda.
Defer or move?
Or I'm sorry, did I say defer? Forgive me. I want to move that to the open agenda, 9F1, if we could, please.
9F1, and I'd like to move 9N1 to open.
What page is that on? Same page?
Same page, yeah.
Which one was that?
9N, well, it's in... not the same page. 7. 9N1 for emergency management.
Okay. All right. Now that we have, are there any other modifications? Commissioners, do we have a motion to accept the consent agenda with modifications?
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We have a couple of individuals who would like to comment, if we could please. Adrian Heath, if you could come forward and share. And then also Charlotte Cooksey in just a moment. Welcome.
May I ask you?
Mm-hmm.
Just for the record, just so everybody knows, we allow for 3 minutes for each individual to come and speak.
Am I using my time now?
No, we're going to let you hand these out, then you can use your time. Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Have an award for the poor.
Now you're into your time, Mr. Heath.
Judge and Commissioners, my name is Adrian Heath, a 29-year denizen of Montgomery County. I'm here today to present the inaugural Golden Mailbox Award to the entire Commissioners' Court. The Golden Mailbox is awarded when authorities exhibit blatant rent-a-voter abuse, in this case connected to Montgomery County MUD 111, which we just took off the consent agenda. Rent-a-voters are recruited by developers and MUD directors to specifically vote affirmatively for district ballot measures in Texas elections. In May 2017, Reagan Reed from the Texas Scorecard reported on two temporary voters deployed by McMud 145 in Cut and Shoot to approve $175 million in bonds and $1.50 per $100 in taxes. A process where developers induce votes from youngsters with no connection to the community, and Reed said to avoid the risk of a real election where the electorate might not be inclined to vote in favour of the measures. Now we have MUD 111 that held a similar election for a similar purpose and predetermined outcome in the May 2018 election. But wait, the two voters were the same two voters in the 145 election and the 111 election. Texas bribery law, section 3602 of the Penal Code says, a person commits an offence if he intentionally or knowingly offers, confers, or agrees to confer on another any benefit as consideration for a recipient's decision, vote, or other exercise of discretion as a voter. Today's agenda item for MUD 111 offers the entire court an opportunity to respect the rule of law and bring rent-a-voter abuse into sharp focus. Please review the official county records provided before you consider and approve this agenda the next time you put it back on the agenda, and decline to act on the agenda item and instead join me in calling on Conroe-based Texas Ranger Chris Perkins to investigate this violation of Texas law. And so, Judge, I hope, and Commissioners, that you will all carefully consider the evidence from your own records about these voters. How do they come to vote twice in consecutive years in the same MUD? And this is just scratching the surface. There are dozens and dozens of examples of this in Montgomery County. I did an open records request with the Secretary of State that gave me a list of 128 voters in 18 Houston area counties that all were recruited either through Craigslist and other methods to vote for these special purpose districts. The voters have no connection to the community that they're voting for or the measures they're supporting. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Heath. Appreciate it so much.
And
we have Charlotte Cooksey, if we may.
Perfect. Thank you. I needed a new mailbox.
Morning, Judge Kehoe. I'm here, basically, I live in Allendale Subdivision. We are still sitting with a ton of water. I was told on the 12th of last month that this whole breakthrough would be through in June. We're sitting out there with water in our ditch, stinks like sewage, and tons of mosquitoes. Nobody seems to want to do anything about it. You know, that's my biggest problem. There's a grant. If it needs to be signed in, please sign it in so we can get this done.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
We appreciate your comments.
Thank you
so much for coming today, Charlotte. All right. Let's move to our open items. First, to item 9F1. Who will be presenting that from the committee?
Judge, I'm going to do that one.
Okay.
Consider and approve update to the budget policy authorizing county commissioner departments to open, close, and modify department positions as needed following assessment by the budget office. Departments will not exceed total authorized budget for current year.
We have a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
I move.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? I've got a couple of things I would like to mention about this as it relates to our discussion. Because I thought a lot about this, and I thought about where we were in relationship to how we make decisions periodically on how things affect the total budget. And as I thought about this, near as I can tell, commissioners, at least since I've been here and I suspect before, that we've never turned down a commissioner as it related to any of requests that are those things that are to be addressed in this issue. So I guess my question is, why would we do this? What do we have, what have we not proven, or what have we, how have we proven that we can work together and get things done without a fundamental change in operating the way we have historically operated? Because to me, there's a couple issues here. The first issue to me is that this, if we do this, this usurps the constitutional authority that we have as a commissioner's court. And Article 5, Section 18 has it right here in this constitution. And we have the authority to do the people's business. We have the authority to exercise, and I quote, powers and jurisdiction over all county business. This particular principle here would undermine the constitutionality of that, especially the spirit of the Constitution. Furthermore, at any given time, it would yield to one person with the approval of our budget office, a non-elected position, albeit you do an awesome job, we love you, and we appreciate all your contributions, that you've got one person in the budget office go ahead.
That's not necessarily true. So when we do the assessment by the budget office, the position, if it's not already on the class code table, does require HR. So HR has to approve the PDQ.
Oh, okay. So now we have two unelected officials
that
are making the decision or that will bring to the commissioners. Let me finish because I understand your position. I do. And you know, I don't want to show you any disrespect, okay, because we love what you do and you make an unbelievable contribution. But if you think about this, it's we have jurisdiction over all county business, and essentially to two people who are non-elected officials, we report as commissioners and as the court as a whole to all the members of the court. But not only that, in doing this, it really does eliminate transparency. And as I thought about that, because I thought, well, does it really? Because we can bring this to the court and we can talk about these things. So I went to our website and I looked up our transparency section on our county website. And this is what it says. It says, openness, accountability, and honesty define government transparency. In a free society, transparency is government's obligation to share information with citizens. It is at the heart of how citizens hold their public officials accountable. You say, but we will be sharing that. Well, okay, listen to the second part. Governments exist to serve the people. Information on how officials conduct the public business and spend taxpayers' money must be readily available and easily understood. This transparency allows good and just governance. This was put in place long before I got here. It's put in by the Commissioner's Court. And so, to me, it usurps our constitutional authority and it takes away a right that the people have to see in the open exactly where the money is spent And this includes opening, closing, and modifying issues as it relates to positions. So I have to tell you, that's my position, and I will vote against this item. And I just want to go on record with that. Now, we have a motion on the floor. Is there any other discussion?
Can I just give an explanation as to how this kind of came about and everything? Okay.
Sure.
So
great.
Back in February, Commissioner Metz requested that we come up with some verbiage on opening, closing operator positions. Well, after several court members approached me, there was a request that not necessarily that it should affect just operators, because not all of four commissioners, you guys don't have just operators. You have other positions in your... And so this gives you the opportunity to fix the recycle positions that you have, to fix your nature center positions that you have, to fix your community center positions that you have, any of those positions that are outside of your operator positions, as long as you have the money in your budget to do so. So correct. You still have to go through, you can't, you know, request a bunch of positions that you can't cover in your budget. It does require the budget office. What we'll be looking for is, you know, that the pay you guys are wanting to do falls in the pay grade scale, so minimum, maximum, in that range. We're going to look at civil service requirements with HR to see if the position is covered by civil service, and, you know, if we think we should bring that to court based on that it is covered by civil service. So just because we're saying, yes, you can do this, doesn't necessarily mean the budget office and HR is going to sign off on it automatically. There may be some instances where it still comes to commissioner's court.
Right, right.
And it does take a PCR.
And it does take a PCR, correct. And
just
so,
like it always has.
So the commissioner's court would be able, if you have an issue with something, be able to pull the PCR into open, discuss it in open, all of that approach. So,
right.
And we do plan on, just like we have this year, we've updated the salary schedule 3 or 4 times. We plan on doing that too, so that the public does have the knowledge of what the positions exist, what the salaries are, all of that case. So I do feel like we are trying to make it more efficient while also being transparent by putting things on the web that previously weren't always put on the web. And so we are trying to build that up.
And I can appreciate that, Amanda, and I appreciate your efforts, and I do appreciate your explanation. And I think it's a good explanation for what it's trying to do. I think, however, that all we're talking about here is a period of time, that we just don't want to take the time that it's going to take to bring this to the court, make it an open item, either whether it's through consent to be open or whatever. And it takes away from the spirit of transparency that we're trying to build into the court. And historically, what we maintained in this area because of how we have done it in the past. And remember, I know that there is a feeling we want to move this forward because, you know, we want to be more efficient. We are in kind of an entrepreneurial mindset to it, which I really appreciate given my business background. But this is not a business. This is a court, and the authority of the court is expressly given to us by the Texas Constitution to have an impact on all matters having to do with the business of this county. And I think if we do this, we're going to take away that constitutional right. That's just my feeling. And
just,
we could,
just to confirm, we did approach the county attorney's office for their legal opinion on that, and you know, they don't set policy, but they said there was nothing illegal about what we were trying to do, as far as I can, Amy can chime in on that.
And honestly, I don't think there is anything illegal. I'm not saying that it's illegal, but it doesn't go along with the spirit of what our Constitution is as a group of people who want to see what's going on, especially in light of issues that have come up in the past.
I think
so. That's my feeling, and that's what I'm going to go with. So we can have more discussion, but I'm done.
Amen.
Go ahead.
My concern is...
Amen. Thank you, sir. Your Honor.
If we can, we reserve our comments for after court. But thank you. Go ahead.
Will we be able to move somebody from not covered under civil service to being covered under civil service? And my question for that is, you got somebody leaving office. It takes
point.
A bunch of people or a couple of people that are not covered and puts them under civil service. That's my concern.
So that was one of my major concerns. I'll be honest with you. I expressed that concern with the county attorney's office. And what we do feel like is, just because you want it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. If we feel the budget office, HR, if we feel like it's not appropriate, or that you might be trying to do something that we, in our interest, you know, We may bring it to Commissioner's Court anyways, just so you guys can hash it out in front of everybody.
And the PCR still goes through court.
And the PCR still goes through court. We're not trying to, you know, give you guys any more power. We're not trying to take any of that away from you. What we're trying, either or, what we're trying to do is make your processes more efficient. There's been multiple times this year that you guys have had people switch between the commissioner's offices because one commissioner might be paying a little bit more. And so we're trying to fix some of that. If you have somebody that leaves for $2 more an hour and you can afford to do the $2 more an hour, why wouldn't you want to keep that instead of having to train a new employee? So that's kind of where
here's the budget. But here's the deal. When we talk about this as a group, when we are open as a group representing the people of all of our constituents, when we talk about it in that way, we come to some decisions, we change our minds, we work through this stuff. What this will become is we've made the change, and depending upon how much pressure a particular commissioner will put on whatever offices it's associated with, all of a sudden you will have things appearing on there that will come up on consent that we may read, we may not read, that people won't see it. And the fact of the matter is all of a sudden we've gone behind closed doors again. And I'm out on that deal. That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing here. And we have a process in place that I think that it works. It's been working. We've been getting things done. But I can't help but think this may be motivated by some other things, of which I'm not going to get into. But if it is, it would be to me a travesty that we're going to put a policy in place because we didn't get our way on a particular issue or other issue. I'm out on that deal, too. We represent the people of this county. We represent the people of this county. We don't represent us. We don't represent each other here, guys.
Can we just go ahead and vote now?
No.
Well, I think we can.
No, we can't. And I have authority over this court, and I'm in the middle of a conversation.
Your magnanimous elocution.
You do not have the authority to interrupt me. That's rude.
No, I think it's rude.
You're
to continue
rude.
Going
no,
on
rude.
And on. Let's vote.
So I believe we have that this is what we're doing here. And I'm just going to ask the court to vote against this. And if you do, I'm going to love everybody anyway, and we'll get along, we'll work together. But the fact of the matter is, I think there are solid reasons why you shouldn't. That being said, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, who we have? Commissioner Metter, you're in favor? I'm sorry, I didn't hear. So let's make sure. Let's do a roll call, though. Commissioner Metter?
Aye.
Charlie?
Aye.
I had a comment before.
Okay.
My name was brought up, and I'd like to clarify something. Is the reason I brought this up originally, and I don't know if it's that way in all your offices, but in Precinct 4, we had Operators 1, Operator 2s, and Operator 3s. And the reason I needed this before, I had open positions, let's say, at an Operator 3. I didn't need an Operator 3. I needed an Operator 1. And as a new commissioner coming in, I needed to fill those Operator 1 positions because in the past 4 years where little to nothing was done in that precinct, I was behind schedule and still behind schedule and doing everything in my power by starting a 6 crew to try to catch up. And it put me in a bad position, right, or in a difficult position to wait 3 weeks to hire an operator, right, bring it forward and hire an Operator 1. That's all I was trying to do. Never entered my mind of not being transparent in any way, form, or fashion.
It was, if you recall, it was very open. Position. We all voted in favor of it.
Another comment I'd like to make.
But we're
you guys know, a lot of times we lose a guy, say, on the lay-down crew, or maybe two. Well, to wait 3 weeks to fill that position puts a lot of stress on the other guys working that
correct
crew. And it's hot and it's hard, and the quicker you can get another guy there to fill in on that crew, the better it is for everybody involved. And I think it's a good thing. I mean, again, we're not trying to hide anything. It comes through court. It's a PCR.
And this, if I may, this is for commissioners, department only, correct? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Not any other departments?
No, basically like your 613, 612, 614, all those departments that are underneath you.
Okay.
You know, some commissioners have a few more cost centers than others, but it would affect all the cost centers that the the commissioner is directly involved.
I'm curious as we're talking.
It doesn't affect our budget.
Okay.
Or the next year's budget because of the way our budgets are set.
But as long as we're keeping the discussion going here in the middle of a vote, I'm curious. Who's the one that really put this on the agenda? Was this you, Amanda? Who was it? Who put it on the agenda?
No, I asked for it.
No, Commissioner Nowak asked me for it. But I will say Commissioner Nowak's not necessarily the – there's other court members that have expressed concerns within my tenure here of some issues that they have had. So, yes, Commissioner Nowak was the one that brought it, but he wasn't the only one I feel like that had the same concern.
And, Judge, quite honestly –
I'm just asking.
I want to ask, where was the Constitution on 226 when we passed the same item? It read, consider and authorize county commissioner departments to open and close various operator positions as needed following assessment by the budget office.
Right.
Departments will not exceed total authorized positions or total budgeted amount for current year.
Right.
Wait, don't interrupt me. That's
forgive
rude.
Me. I'm sorry.
So what that means is I have operators, I have recycle technicians. I have community center workers.
Right.
I have my signal technicians, and I have another group of technicians that don't fall under the operator category. So right now, what this forces me to do is I hire people as an operator because right now, with your blessing, we can hire operators as we please whenever we want to. No additional approval, according to you, even though the PCR goes through court, and we can pull those PCRs, which we've done numerous times, and vote on them up and down. So this is about letting us operate within the confines of this one section for operators, recycle techs, and those individuals in our – right now I'm trying to hire somebody from another entity, and I don't have the right position open. It doesn't affect our budget because the way the county commissioners' budgets are set, we get a lump sum of dollars. If we spend those dollars on people or we spend those dollars on materials, the very next year our budget is going to be the same. We have less money for materials, more money for people. It's different than for every other department.
And Commissioner Nowak has 19 operators and 41 people that are in other positions.
Right.
He's a precinct that has a majority of his employees are outside of the operators.
Okay, now, concerning what you just said, and I appreciate that, and that's a fair argument in the spirit of transparency. It is a fair argument. But we also have the authority on any given situation as a commissioner's court to make a decision on a particular issue at a given time, given a specific need. And Commissioner Metz had a need. He just told us about his need. And so we made a decision. We could have made it just for him. We chose to make it for everybody. But it's a huge leap from going from operator position to every position under the authority of the commissioner's court. And so from that perspective, that was never the spirit of that decision. It was never intended to lead to this. And I think if it does lead to us, unfortunate, and I believe it denies the spirit of the Constitution and for sure the transparency that we want to have here in our county. That being said, let's do a vote again. So there's no question. Commissioner Metter, where are you at on this? In favor?
Yeah.
Okay. Charlie? Yep.
Yep.
I'm going to abstain on this one.
Okay. I'm a vote no, solidly. All right?
Okay.
Now, thank you all for that spirited discussion. Okay. The next item that was in modification was emergency management, N1. Consider, discuss, and approve submission of the CDBG-DR 2017 housing grant application. And we'll have Darren come up. Darren?
Good morning, Judge. Commissioners?
Morning.
As the judge reflected, we've moved to item N1 to open. Consider, discuss, and approve the submission of the CDBG-DR 2017 housing grant application on behalf of Montgomery County. This grant is for the buyout of homes within Montgomery County, authorizing Judge Mark Keogh to sign as the authorized official and allow Darren Hess to execute. Questions?
Okay.
Yes. Can you kind of give us an update of this grant? I know this has been going on since 17. Judge Doyle signed this a long time ago, and I just wanted to find out where we are in the process, kind of how it's going to work. Is there going to be an intermediary in there that we're going to be working with to go out and do the procurement of these homes? I know it's on a voluntary basis. I know that there's a scorecard in place. But two questions that I want you to keep in mind is, I believe that we're trying to make sure that the individuals that are going to be have this as an option, they have to be owner-occupied homes. So we're not going to be buying rent homes for people. And I still have concerns about the LMI requirement. It seems really high. About 83% of these homes, I think, have to be in low to moderate income areas. Will we have enough? The places like Timber Lakes, Timber Ridge, I heard that doesn't even qualify in LMI in some cases. Same thing with some of the other territories that we're trying to buy homes in.
That's correct. You're absolutely correct. There are several subdivisions that we have that, standing on their own, would probably qualify for LMI, but they reside within census blocks that elevate those numbers. And so to overcome some of those obstacles, we have to do stronger public outreach and go out, and Dr. Ducharme can comment on that, but you have to do a public outreach and go out, kind of do door-to-door surveys and establish up those LMI requirements for those targeted areas that you want to reflect. There's also we're continually having conversations with both the GLO and HUD to reduce that LMI requirement, lowering the percentages. There is discussion currently between the state and HUD where they think that may happen starting with the 2016 program. As the programs evolve, HUD wants to be certain that their targeted homes, the LMI communities, are receiving the greatest impact. And once that's occurred, once they see that progress, then it's our belief that they'll come back and they'll lower those restrictions, allowing us to expand the program to areas of the county that wouldn't ordinarily qualify. We also have one other program that's underway that's targeted specific properties that don't have the LMI requirement, and we have an HMGP application in the amount of $80 million with the state now to target residences that wouldn't meet this qualification, these qualifying conditions.
So will any of the homes in River Plantation qualify under this?
I don't believe under this program, no, sir.
How did they meet the requirements back in 94? Is LMI new?
No, LMI is not, and I don't know that it applied in 94. Dr. Ducharme, do you recall, was the LMI a requirement of that program?
Yeah. Huh? Well, I was, and we bought a lot of homes.
We bought a lot of homes. I don't recall which grant program that operated under.
My recollection from 1994 was a private practice at that point. It was a disaster grant, wasn't it?
You can speak into the mic, please.
So different money.
Yeah, it's a different pool of money. It was the hazard mitigation type grant, and rather than a HUD grant. So the River Plantation did qualify for those, and my recollection, they bought out just in the flood way at that point.
Hmm. So that money's not available today.
Community development didn't exist until 99.
Okay.
But did that do away with the disaster money just because you exist now?
I'm sorry, Commissioner.
Does that do, okay. Yeah. That's my question.
We have an open application with the state now on the HMGP program. They have not made an award yet. We anticipate that award, and we anticipate an answer or decision on those applications in June.
What kind of money do you think we're looking at there? Do you know?
I have no idea, Commissioner. I really wouldn't. I wouldn't care to speculate.
It doesn't have an LMI qualification.
No, but it has a match requirement.
Right.
He was going to use the CDBG for the match.
Right.
Which put
Dr. Ducharme, in your experience, will we be able to put this money to use in the community? Are we going to be able to find enough of individuals under the LMI requirement to take advantage of the money above? I mean, my concern is we're going to get this grant, and we're not going to be able to use it. There's not going to be enough people, and do we have the resources to actively go out there? I guess you use some of the grant money to hire people to go out there and do it, but I see that we could spend millions of dollars on outreach and not be able to buy the homes that we need to buy. It seems like it could be a bad program for us.
Yeah, is it worth it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
There are a lot of issues at hand. One is the while the HMGP funds do not have an LMI requirement, it does have a match requirement. And my understanding is that the match is coming from the CDBGDR funds. It is not?
It is not.
Homeowner is going to satisfy
homeowners
the
doing
match,
the match?
Correct.
Okay, then good. So only the CDBGDR funds are going to have the LMI requirement. And your HMGP funds, and I don't,
And I know you don't have a lot to do with this
I'm
grant.
Not
I'm just
involved
asking
with
you based
it.
On your historical
The research
background.
We did for the 2016 grant indicated that we had an ample pool of about 500 houses in low income, and we would only be able to do 60 or 80.
Well, where were they? Do you remember that? Do you know where they
were? I still have them up on my wall. You're welcome to come and look dot and by dot.
Forgive me. I want to make sure I because I was going to ask a question. How many of the 4,000 or 5,000 homes that you mentioned in this application, how many of those are in areas that meet the LMI standards? Do we know?
I don't have that number in front of me.
I do. 350 of them from the 2016 floods, of which we were only going to be able to buy out at max about 60.
And we scaled, in this application, scaled the number, let's say it was 5,000, all the way down to 360-something homes that we're going to be targeting for buyout, of which we think we may be able to get 50 or 60 of them. So we need to know how many of those 50, how many of those homes are actually in the LMI zone before we move further. And more importantly, one of the things that this reads, the county does not have any public housing, talking about Section 8 only and the housing authority and how this works. And then it goes on to say in this application, and I don't know who put the language in there, but it says, going forward, the county not only plans to continue the down payment assistance and rehab programs and continue to fund CHDOs to develop affordable housing for low-income locals. How are we going to do that? We have no affordable housing now. What efforts are we undertaking to develop affordable housing in the future to satisfy this grant?
Well, the charter is doing some of that.
No, but it says that we're going to do more based on this grant. So what are we going to – what is your –
But is it – if I may, it's not taking the money from the grant to do that, okay? It was they're asking that as part of an agreement on the front end, whatever that means. But I have another question as well. If – let's say that we get the full amount of the monies and we can't use it all and we don't have it, doesn't fit in the parameters, what do we do with the reserve? Is that possible?
Return it.
That is possible. That is possible. And at that point in time, we would send the request back to the state to amend, and to HUD to amend that percentage to LMI and request that they lower that restrictive amount, which would expand our program to those residences outside of that LMI, the current LMI standard.
So the point is that if we take the resources, we can resolve. Please feel free to chime in here, Doctor. We can resolve some of the issues that we've had with homes that need the buyout. And if there's reserve, we can take that money, turn around and reapply and expand those that we're able to go to, correct? So the question is, why would we not want to take the money? I mean, if there's a reason, I'm good. But if there isn't,
you can request.
This is a question probably for Dr. Ducharme, but Montgomery County is an entitlement community. As such, the money is coming here. Mm-hmm. And so I think by refusing those funds could jeopardize future programs.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. Any other discussion?
I'd like an answer to some of the questions. Number one,
The data that you're referring to in that question is the duplicative data from the 2016 application, and so it was just carried forward.
So it's just information.
We're working in conjunction with the CDG office and those programs that they have in place now.
So we have an idea of, Dr. Ducharme, I guess this is your answer from a previous questionnaire that's been plugged in.
That's word for word my 2016 application, and it's not necessarily accurate for Harvey.
For this? Okay. So we might need – I just don't want us to tell the feds that we're going to do something that we're actually not doing. If we don't have plans to expand those efforts, then we need to
– The statement that you just read about the CHODOs, mm-hmm. that's coming out of my entitlement funds, and that's an ongoing entitlement program.
Can those funds be used here, or can that same effort be used?
No, that particular question in the application was asking totally – overall, what's the county doing for its low-income people and its vulnerable people.
So we may want to reword that answer before we submit this application, it sounds like.
That piece will stay the same. The CHOTO's continuing to be active. It's just moving from Willis to Montgomery. Harvey, though, is East County predominantly.
Okay.
So the question remains. Let's say that we submit it. We can't cover all of it. We can then reapply, correct, for the use of the rest of the money. In the event that we can't use it all to meet the criteria, I guess is my question.
Okay. HUD's requirement is that 51% of the people and 70% of the money go to low-income people. But the money came to the state, so it's the state's obligation to hit that. Okay. Initially, they send it down to us and say 51% of your people and 70% of your money has to go for low income. But as the program progresses, just like Darren said, there will be jurisdictions that spend 100% of their money on low income people. But there might be jurisdictions that only spend 20% of their money on low income people. So as the program progresses and people start giving their money back, the state will reassess where they stand with HUD overall.
I got you.
And there is a chance, but there's a very, very slim chance, because most jurisdictions are going to hit their 51-70 ratios.
Right.
And then try to help the people who are the notch group who are above that.
How long have we been waiting on this, these monies, to be able to do this and to be able to receive them? How long has this been going on?
Well, the 2016 program hadn't started yet, has it?
So since 2016, we have people that are waiting on this to take place.
Like the lady in the audience.
Right.
Yes. Okay. The contract, I'm not going to speak for Rebecca unless she starts shaking her head. The contract just came down for, yes. The contract
so
just went through court today.
So this has been going on a long time here. And people have been inconvenienced a long time. Okay.
More than inconvenienced.
Right. We've had that discussion.
Long.
I understand that. Yeah. Okay.
Is there any issue with the – does that question need to be re-answered? Is it okay to submit it with incorrect information, or should we at least change that? BD, is it going to matter?
I believe I heard Dr. Ducharme say that on that particular –
The statement he read out.
Yes.
Would be correct.
Yeah. That is correct.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Okay, do we have a motion to accept
Thank you
this?
For the hard work on it. I know you've been working for 18 months or more together on these. And
do we have a motion to accept?
People have been waiting a long time.
They have been.
Thank you, guys. I move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all, gentlemen, for that.
Thank you, Court.
At this time, do we have some citizens, or is that at the end? At the very end. Okay. Then let's move on. On this next item, 11A, I'm going to defer that item. And 12, let's move on to 12A. Rakesh?
Good morning, Judge. Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Item 12A, consider and approve the payment of accounts.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much, Rakesh. County Attorney.
Can I excuse me? I think my agenda item has been covered. And if you'll excuse me, I'll leave.
Thank you.
Mark?
All right. Gilbert, or County Attorney, BD, if you would please.
Okay.
Or Amy, whichever.
Item 13A is to approve the actual mutual termination agreement that was brought up last time with Gern Offshore. We have not received this. We prepared a mutual termination agreement, much the same we did with CBI. I have not received it back. But what I would like the court to do is take action on approving the form of the agreement. It does contain a couple of provisions in the that were not discussed the last time. And to address some of the concerns, we put in an agreement that Gern covenants to pay all the 2019 ad valorem taxes prior to delinquency, and also that they agree they will not protest the 2019 values. And if they do either of those things, then we get to recapture the taxes. So I have not heard back from Gern on those conditions, but I'd like to, you to go ahead and approve at least that form of the agreement.
I move. Okay. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I'm opposed. I haven't read the agreement.
Motion carries. Thank you. To purchasing. Gilbert.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good, thank you. The first item is to approve granting a discretionary exemption for the McCaleb Road widening project. This is a relocation of electrical power poles in the amount of $495,712. This is a 54% of the cost of this project, and this is a Precinct 2 project, Commissioner.
I move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. B.
And B, this is award to Project 1931. This is for wireless move adds and deletes and changes for the Sheriff's Office. The vendor is Telelogistics of Conroe. The pricing is based on the number of phones that are placed with the program. We estimate 700 phones. So it's approximately $2,800 a month.
Second.
And the sheriff did include this in his 2020 budget submittal.
Second.
Yes.
Good job, Sheriff.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Aye,
Gilbert, appreciate it so much. All right. Now, given our other item, do we need to, you want to can keep, we can defer it, I guess, at this point.
That was going to be my question. I'd be glad to expound on this some and explain why I'm doing this, but since it's been approved.
You've already got authority to do it.
Sounds
but if
great.
You'd like to expound, I think it would be in the spirit of transparency. Help yourself.
I'll do that. My project coordinator is Bill Smith, does an outstanding job. And I noticed that working from time to time at the office till this gentleman comes to work at 5 in the morning. He handles all projects for us in Precinct 4, whether it's drainage, roads, things of that nature. As I said, he arrives at 5 in the morning. So I'm working in the evening from time to time till 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the evening. This gentleman's still there. So that told, as his employer, that told me two things. He's either inefficient, and he is not, or he's overloaded with work. And he's not the kind of guy to ask for help. I went to him and asked him, so what's the problem? And he laid out all the things that he's doing, and so he needed some help in there. So we're moving this guy up internally. We're training him now, and he's doing an outstanding job. There's just so much work to do in Precinct 4. This gentleman needed some help. I'm putting a lot of pressure on him, and so That's why we just added an inspector for him to inspect culverts and things like that. That's what the gentleman will be doing. So
we appreciate that, Commissioner Metz.
You're welcome.
All right. We're going to recess right now from Montgomery County Commissioner's Court and convene public hearings. Public
did
hearing,
you withdraw
Melissa.
That, Commissioner, or did we vote?
Your previous item clarified him to be able to do it on his own without approval.
It's done.
Your approval earlier.
Okay.
Take care of that.
Thank you for the question. Okay, we're going to recess temporarily Montgomery County Commissioner's Court to convene public hearings. Melissa.
Good morning.
Morning.
Every year the district clerk is required by statute to have a public hearing regarding the preservation and restoration of archived records. This year, I propose to do our preservation in-house. We will file each court document into acid-free products. Additionally, each file will be entered into Odyssey, making the file available to the public online. If during This operation, any file is too fragile for in-house handling. I will utilize the vendor we currently use, which is CoFile. I'm projecting to use about $40,000 this year from the District Clerk Technology Fund, and it begins 2019 to 2020.
All right.
Just ask the court to approve my request.
Well, right now we're going to have a public hearing. Is anybody here to talk about it?
Oh, thank you.
All right.
No,
thank
that's
you.
A lot of work.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Melissa.
Thank you.
Tremendous job, too. We went over and looked at it. It's unbelievable. Thank you.
Thank you.
So now we need the court to reconvene and then take action.
Okay. We have a motion to approve the funding on this.
Move. Second.
And approve the Arkadville plan as presented.
Yes.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Melissa. All right. We have some citizens who would like to share some things. I think we have one left. Eric Yalick, I believe, is here today to make some comments.
Thank you, Judge, Commissioners. My name is Eric Yalick. I live in Precinct 3. I want to just briefly thank Commissioner Metz all the way around. Thank you, sir. Today's Golden Hammer Award goes to Commissioner Charlie Riley for three reasons with respect to the Montgomery County Toll Road Authority. The Toll Road Authority needs to pay back about $1.1 million to Montgomery County, and there are three components to those funds. Number one, there was money taken from the general fund that was not part of the reimbursement agreement that this court approved on February 9, 2015. Specifically, $44,650 was paid in a preliminary engineering contract to Half Associates for a project feasibility study. Those funds were never reimbursed to Montgomery County, and they should be from the available funds in the Montgomery County Toll Road Authority. Second of all, if you look at the real purpose of spending money on the Woodlands Parkway extension before the 2015 bond referendum, very clearly, if you go to the TNR study that was done for the 249 extension, the purpose of those funds was to bring traffic to the 249 extension and justify that expenditure on the toll road funds. If you look at the total amount of money that was spent on the Woodlands Parkway extension, even before that bond election, it was $990,662 on a road that, even according to Commissioner Riley, apparently we're never going to build now. Finally, I want to bring to the court's attention the fact that repeatedly, and I've now been sitting in commissioner's court meetings for 3 years, every time that there was a discussion about repaying funds on the reimbursement agreements, there was a promise that there would be payment of interest along with those funds. We never received any interest payments on the $425,000 that was spent on the 2014 TNR study. The total amount of money is $1,163,874.50. Those funds should go from the Montgomery County Toll Road Authority back into the general fund. At this point, there's no plan for that. There's no discussion for that. And for that reason, Commissioner Riley receives today's Golden Hammer Award.
Thank you, Mr. Yalick. Are there any other comments? Yes. Yes, please state your name and your purpose, please. Come to the microphone.
My name is Tammy Gunnels. I'm here about our flooding situation. Can I hand these out to you guys? I printed these out.
Please. G-U-N...
G-U-N-N-E-L-S.
All right.
Gunnels. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for preparing this.
No, I don't need it. You go ahead what you said.
Okay, my husband and I live at 20396 Russell Drive in Porter, Texas. We live in Precinct 4. We bought the house as our retirement home in December of 08. 4 months later, we flooded for the first time. As of May 7th, we have flooded 12 times. We are not in a floodway. We are not in a flood zone. When we bought the house, we paid less than $300 for flood insurance. Flood insurance has now cost us over $2,000 a year. Again, not in a flood zone. State Farm dropped us after our first claim saying we were high risk. That's when we found out that our home had flooded 7 times before we bought it, and the sellers only disclosed twice. We took those 2 disclosures and thought it was because of the 1994 and another major event, which was unpreventable. We have taken several steps to mitigate ever getting water into the home. I've given you a list of over 100 different things that we have personally done out of our own pocket, starting with a concrete berm that goes 8 inches below the ground, 6 inches above the ground, around the entire perimeter of our home. We've installed a sand clay mix berm next to that concrete berm. We've removed all traditional pink insulation and replaced it with waterproof spray foam insulation. Replaced sheetrock with green board because it's moisture resistant on the bottom 4 feet of all interior walls. Green board is cut 4 inches from the bottom of the floor, and we have 5-inch PVC baseboards versus wood. We have 3 feet of PVC jam savers on all exterior doors. We've removed all carpet and padding, replaced it. First, we went with indoor-outdoor carpet. Then we got septic in the house. So we did away with the carpeting altogether, went with paint that we learned would bubble and mar up every time we flooded after that, so we went with stained concrete floors. That's just some of the things, and again, I've given you a list of the things that we've done. The Back Pew Brewery on Sorters Road cleared 10-plus acres, clear cut, and then graded the land towards our street. Homes that have never, ever, ever flooded now flood with 4 or more inches in the forecast. I am one of the homes that has begged for a buyout for over 9 years. I don't know if I know I don't fall into the low income grid. I'm right there in middle income. However, insurance has paid out, including this last claim, which I've included in your papers, over $300,000 for a one-story home that was built in 1967. We owe $69,000 on that house. This last flood claim will pay out over $80,000. I'm not even asking for fair market value. I'm asking for a buyout. Get me out of the house. That's all I'm asking for.
Ms. Gunnels, thank you very much for your comments. We appreciate it so much. All right. Are there any other comments? Yes.
Hi, Dennis Tibbs from Magnolia, and I just have a brief comment about our meeting here. The agenda is good for bullet points. This item number 14, we talked about purchasing. I understand what they're talking about. Commissioner Metz discussed his issue. Some of these others, this emergency management, y'all spent 20 minutes talking about it. You could have spent 20 seconds telling us kind of what it is and giving us a little bit of history. So while these are good bullet points, when we're discussing them, we need a little bit more meat. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Tibbs.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Linda Harper, and I live in Precinct 4. I just want to say thank you, Judge Koig, for your efforts at keeping
things. I assume you're talking about me.
I'm sorry.
Keo.
I'm sorry, Keo.
I've been called worse.
Nurse, but thank you so much in your effort to keep things transparent. The court is reminding me of the federal agencies who take a lot of action without the people or even the Congress knowing what's going on. And again, I wanted to say thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Appreciate it so much. Thank you. Is this on a different topic, Mr. Heath?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Judge and Commissioners, my name is Adrian Heath. I'm a denizen of Montgomery County. I live deep inside the boundaries of the Woodlands Road Utility District, number one. My remarks today are directed at you, my judge, Judge Keogh, and supported by the official documents that I provide today, which come from the county. You are county judge. You're also chairman of the Montgomery County Election Board and the Montgomery County Election Committee, and you're a director of the Woodlands Road Utility District Number 1. How can you sit by and tolerate vote suppression by the Road Utility District? Twice each year, your elections department, and commissioners should pay attention too, twice each year, your elections department notifies the Road Utility District that they have an increasing number of eligible voters. This last election, the county notified them that they had 49 eligible voters within the boundaries of the district. Among the 49 eligible voters and qualified voters present within the boundaries of the RUD, there are two voters on opposite ends of the same street that serve as a graphic illustration of how votes are suppressed in the Road Utility District. Street numbers begin on the south end of Technology Forest Drive with 2630, the address of billionaire developer Dirk Lorkin and family, and run to 8505 on the north end, the law office business address of a well-known MUD attorney, former Montgomery County Assistant Attorney, and a former Harris County prosecutor. Both addresses lay within the boundaries of the same overlapping taxing districts, including the Road Utilities District, the Township, Montgomery County, the Hospital District, Lone Star College, Conroe ISD, and they're active voters there. Now, according to the spurious theories of the RUD, only Dirk Lorkin and family are eligible to vote at the sole residential property in the RUD. But this well-known attorney and about half of the other eligible voters are active voters in the overlapping districts. If the RUD were allowed to apply their reckoning to this attorney and the others, as they have done in the past, those voters would be considered invalid and would be prosecuted for voter fraud. But you have not hunted down the county. You have not hunted down this attorney, whose bio I have furnished, or the others for illegal voting, nor has Conroe ISD, MCHD, Lone Star College, or the Woodlands Township. Either these voters are valid in all overlapping jurisdictions, or none, Judge. Either they're valid to vote in all the districts, or they're not valid in any of the districts. And as the chairman of the voter board and the voter committee, and even my sheriff as part of one of these committees, you must be interested to make sure that people's voting rights are not obliterated. People don't know that they can vote in that RUD because it's not on the voter ballot when they go to vote. I hope you'll look into it. Thank you, commissioners and judge.
Thank you, Mr. Heath.
Thank you, Mr. Heath. Appreciate it. All right.
Judge, I did have one comment real quick. It was just on the agenda item that was deferred 11A. I'm glad that that was deferred. And we've reached out to this individual three or four different times from my office to try to get some information on this request of his for this area to be considered a targeted employment area. Seems like it's a highly gerrymandered area when you look at it, and it's hard for me to believe that there are any areas in Montgomery County that would meet the definition of having high unemployment. And I was happy to see that you deferred that because I didn't want to see it on the agenda anyway. And it
I appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, per our previous conversation, we had put this on the agenda once. You'd asked us to defer it once. We did, and although there are reasons to move forward on it, certainly I want to, in the spirit of transparency and working together, I thought, okay, we waited this long. Let's give it another opportunity.
Yeah. And if you hear from him, let us know.
I appreciate it. Yeah,
for sure
will. Thank you very much. Is there a motion to adjourn?
No. Second.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you all, and now we'll move on. Charlie?